As Wesley did the foregoing writing, he stood before the circle and near to the secretary, and in his usual way, wrote and tore from the tablet and handed to the secretary, leaf by leaf, as written upon, to 6 leaves, then wrote, and left untorn from the tablet, 6 leaves more, handed the tablet to the secretary, telling him to tear the 6 leaves from the tablet and return the tablet to the spirit, and the whole process, the writing, the spirit, the tablet, and the handing of the writing to the secretary, was in full view of all the circle. More than 1,000 words written, and the entire time of the whole process was less than 5 minutes, more than 200 words to the minute. 385. When Wesley had done writing, he handed the tablet to the secretary, saying, "Please, sir, will you tear those other leaves out and return the tablet to me, and count, how many leaves have you?" Secretary, 11, as I count. Spirit, as he backed into the cabinet, "You have more than that, sir," and another count showed there to be 12 sheets. But the spirit went into and through the cabinet and delivered the tablet to another spirit, at the writing desk, in the arena, which latter spirit wrote in very heavy hand the following, to wit, 387. "This is the fountainhead, the source of all light, where rays penetrate the darkness of discord, and which brings peace to the children of earth, stimulating them to deeds which bring joy to the afflicted and comfort to the sorrowing. This truth shines forth like a beacon light to the tempest-tossed mariner, pointing out the way to the haven of rest that hungry souls are seeking." 388. The world is undergoing a cycle change now. Communications are becoming more frequent, and the nations brought into closer contact. Many things are being prepared for unfoldment that the world of science may analyze and determine for the masses who wait for their interpretation. Even now, many who so lately scoffed at the very mention of what was called by ignorant minds supernatural, have changed their tone, and instituted what they call inquiry into psychic effects and causes. We therefore look on with satisfaction at the great progress in everything pertaining to spiritual knowledge made within the last century of the world's time, and see in the present one, so near at hand, far more than has been already given for the education and unfoldment of Earth's children that will aid our efforts in our work. With this progression, love will accompany its onward course, and so impress itself upon the minds of Earth children, that the present discordant elements will slowly but surely vanish in the future, and that harmony born of the spirit world will make itself manifest as a conquering element of peace to all. Dear friends, seek for it, and it will come to gladden your pathway on the journey of life. 389. Picture number 11 made. The artist came forth, and in his usual brief manner, made a very beautiful picture in likeness of a high-class Chinaman, and since we have been told that it is of the founder of the Order of Brave Hearts and has the Chinese name, Wom Van. See 3591, Ralph Leavitt 390. Picture number 13. On Tuesday evening of September 16, 1902, the artist made a picture of one who claims to be a son of Mr. and Mrs. Leavitt of Warren, Arkansas. This son passed out of the physical condition at 1 year of age, and has been in spirit life 22 years. This picture is at least a good likeness of a form that had previously appeared. This spirit was able to materialize to appear as of the size he was when he passed out, and immediately as of the size he would be now, illustrating the fact that a person passing to spirit life, when a child, grows to adult size in spirit life. The parents say that this picture is a good likeness of their son, who is yet living in the physical condition. Seance number 24, September 18, 1902, 391. Present, C. V. N. House and his wife, B. House, Joseph Simpson, Miss May Cook, Dr. Sahus and N. B. Young of Gainsborough, Tennessee, A. Full report of previous seance read and approved, with some slight amendments, and not objected to by the spirits. B. When the medium was set, and entranced, the spirit chemist, Drive Reed, appeared, as usual, and saluted the circle, saying, "The circle is considerably smaller than usual, but I hope that we shall be able to present much matter and interest you." 392. Professor Denton then came forth to the place and attitude of the speakers, and in good, clear, strong, oral tones, eloquently spake substantially as follows, to wit, I am pleased to be with you this evening. Friends, did it ever occur to you that many things go on among the people of your world that ought to seem more ridiculous and absurd than spiritualism? There are people trying to make you believe that they are God or Jesus, and that if you will not believe on them and their God you will be eternally lost, but they are not able to give one scintilla of evidence to show that there is any proof to their claims. It is true, they claim to think immortality a truth, but they do not pretend that it is susceptible of proof. On the contrary, they set up that it cannot be proven, and that, whoever would proclaim that it is a fact susceptible of absolute demonstration is out of the divine harmony, while spiritualism claims and proves immortality to be a truth. Which, then, is the more absurd claim? Spiritualism that proves its claims, or common theology that proves nothing? Cite me something that can prove its claims as spiritualism can. I find no proof of any other. They fail to prove their claims, but you fail not. Why will people not accept that which sets up a better system, and can be proven as clearly as that 2 and 2 are 4? The simple reason is, that they are absorbed in worldly matters. The all-absorbing frenzy for money-making deadens and supersedes all other desires. But by and by, death strikes, then they want to know. Alas! Too late, too late. Away from their earthly wealth they must go, they know not whither. All is dark as midnight ahead and all earthly possessions forever behind. Nothing lighting up the dark valley. Poor, lonely soul. We are trying to reach them, and at least, to light them across the dark way. But there are those who would not receive their nearest kin on earth to save them ages of gloom. Such must wait, must endure the journey over the long dark road till they are willing for beloved ones to help them. 393. Friends, even the Catholic Church is doing some good, all churches are, in their way, but they know not of life beyond. They have no proof, no proof more than the babe in the cradle has that the world is round. But some of them will know soon, yea, much sooner than they think. Good night. 394. Thomas Paine came forth, as Denton retired, and in his old-time eloquence, addressing himself to Dr. Sehers, said, A. Where will you find your Christian? I have met many on this side who on earth were called Christians, but they will not tell me here that they are Christians now. B. My good friend, do not get discouraged. Your work will be appreciated by and by. Look at my book that, if the world had believed and known, it would have been better for them then and would have been better for the world now. My work was for the benefit of the common people. The oppressed. Their oppressors then, and now, do not want better conditions for their servants, and by one sophistry and another, they persuade their servants that the proposed reforms in their behalf will reduce them to abject slavery, and to the condition of paupers, and thus, these people are held to be their very enemies, and their real friends imprisoned. But I am now where they cannot incarcerate me, and you may be thankful to the voice coming down the ages from persecuted martyrs that today they do not incarcerate, guillotine or hang you. So good friends, go on and let the world know where you stand. Let your light shine. What if people are blind, ignorant, will neither see nor hear? Some there are who, seeing your light, will gladly be illuminated thereby, and you will be all the more happy, that you have led some poor souls through the darkness to light and peace. And I would say to you, that we here have no use for a moral coward. At least I have not. I love to see men and women stand for what they are, nevertheless there are times and conditions when and wherein it would seem useless, and even unnecessary. Good night. E. K. Coffin 395. At this seance a form appeared, and from his mannerisms, his speech, and his general appearance was at once recognized as the spirit E. K. Coffin, who has frequently been before these circles from the beginning. This spirit speaks fluently, with apparent ease, and sometimes voluminously, and nearly always with a goodly vein of humor, but occasionally, gives expression to a sorrowful feeling on account of the willful ignorance of the people of earth concerning the conditions into which they must enter on leaving the tenement of clay, and he spoke, on this occasion, substantially thus, to wit, I am glad to be able to be with you, in this way. Some one of the circle, who had not met this spirit, questioned, who is this spirit? Another of the circle, who recognized the personality, said, this is one of God's people, meaning the spirit had been the preacher when on earth, but the spirit answered, I am now one of nature's people. I used to be what was called a preacher of righteousness. Some of it now, to me, is more like foolishness. And I look among the people of earth today and find them so ignorant. So ignorant. It seems that they will go along in the same old rut. But they have been told that ignorance is bliss until, I suppose, they believe it. Oh, if I had known what it would have been to me to have known and preached this great truth of immortal life, instead of the ignorance I did preach, how much better it would have been for me. But instead of that, I pitied the poor sinners who were weak in the faith. 396. I met a spirit man. Poor fellow. I felt sorry for him. He had such a sad look. I asked him what made him so sad. He said, you would be sad if situated as I am. He said to me, what did you do on earth? I told him that I was a preacher, and I can tell you what troubles you. You are hunting for something you will never find, and I can tell you where you are off. And I told him he was hunting for one they call God, and you wish to find the one they say is his only begotten son. But my friend, I have been here long, and if there be such persons, I surely would have found them, but I have not, nor have I met anyone who knows anything of the existence of such persons. I told him that even the Sunday schools gave wrong teaching. This I know. I taught there once, and I find that very much of the Sunday school teaching is erroneous, that these errors are fastened upon the plastic mind of the child, that fit the child for the very sad condition you are in, my friend. I have myself been, and seen so many others hunting for the Sunday school idols and never finding them that I have changed, until I pity those who go to church and kneel to someone who never existed. 397. And now, friends, a little exhortation to you. If you would seek to so live that your credit side would be up, even, in the great book of life, try to make ourselves philanthropic, not so much toward those who will not appreciate, as to those who need your aid and will gladly accept it. Do the best you can. Do good wherever you can. I hope I have not detained you too long. The forces are failing so that I must go. And the spirit retired, saluting the circle as he backed into the cabinet. Gregory the Watchful One of the Band of the Prisoners Hope 398. Forthwith the operator of the typewriter came to his place, took a sheet of paper, placed it in the machine, and began operating the machine very rapidly, noticing which, the circle timed the writing, by pulse beat and by watch. The spirit wrote right onto four pages, making altogether 1,060 words, in 5 minutes of time, or more than 210 words per minute. When the spirit had done writing he said, the gentleman over there, the secretary, was telling our medium the other day that he knew one person on earth that could duplicate my time on this machine. I should be glad to know the color of the gentleman's hair that can duplicate my time tonight. And the following is an exact copy of the writing, to wit, 399. Hope is the star that penetrates the gloom, and guides the unwary traveler past the dark morass of despair. It is the voice from afar that guides the tortured soul out of the dark night of misery. It is the brilliant beacon light that illumines the distant coast, and enables the storm-tossed mariner to steer clear of the shoals of degradation. Hope is the guiding star that has for ages and ages guided the feet of man along the rough road of progression. It is the milestone that points the way to all that is good and noble. If an individual, or race of people, were to lose hope, all aspiration would be lost. A. You speak of a person being hopeless, or this or that case being beyond hope. My friends, it may seem that hope has entirely died out in the human breast, but if you will search carefully, you will find a tiny spark that, if sheltered and fed properly, will soon burn as brightly as ever. If it were not for this, our tasks in spirit life would be difficult indeed, and well nigh impossible. With its aid we are able to awake aspirations within the soul of man that will ever lead him onward, and will not only be the means of making him happier and more useful, but some poor soul who has sank down, as he thinks, never to rise again, will catch a glimpse of the light that has led his fellow traveler higher up the mountainside and fan the little spark of hope in his breast until it glows, and dancing with bright rays, lights up the path that he must travel, to reach the summit of Mount Progression. 400. If men and women coming out of workhouses and prisons could see the bright light of the hope of better days shining before them, how many recommitments do you think would be made? Hope's clear light never seems so dim as when the prison door closes behind him, and one who has served his term all the weary years of his incarceration may have been cheered by hope's kindly light, that when the prison days were over he might begin anew, but when the gate clangs for the last time, and this time leaving him out in the world to take up again its burdens, the clouds of selfishness and self-aggrandizement of his fellow men almost obscure the star of hope that has guided him thus far on the journey of life. 401. For years I have worked with a band of spirits called the Prisoner's Hope, and our emblem is a white dove with a silver star in its beak, symbolizing peace and hope. We have interested many on the earth plane in our work, and are daily interesting many more. It is our wish to have committees at all large prisons, on the days when the prisoners are released, and offer them the true message of hope, the promise of a different life, and in this way, try to make good citizens of them, and the time would soon come, when the prisons would be converted into retention hospitals, and instead of dragging men and women through the streets in chains, many would go of their own free will, and ask for treatment. Stop this system of legal thievery and murder, and you have made a wide step in advancing purity of the people. 402. I have seen many turned out of prison who knew not where to go. One case in particular I remember, of a man who had spent the greater part of his earth life in prison. He had been so long in confinement that he had lost sight of his friends, and when he was released, he felt that he was homeless and friendless. The pain of feeling this would not have been so keen, if he had been far from the haunts of men, but surrounded as he was, by many people and happy homes, the pain seemed greater than he could bear. Oh! If the passers-by had only grasped him by the hand and said, "My brother, I am glad to see you ready to take a new start in life," and made him feel that the world held much that was good for him, how much better this would have been than the cold looks of inquiry they cast upon him, until the poor man felt like he must appear different from mother's exclamation mark, and all the joy and happiness of being free deserted him, and he slunk along as one ashamed of himself, instead of being made to feel that he has been made better by the severe trial he has passed through. After the joy of being free was a joy no longer, he crept back to the prison walls as a tired child to its mother's knee. He pressed his face to the cold damp stone and wept for sheer loneliness. How powerless I felt the aid I so longed to give him. I could not, and it was then that I realized the mistake we were making in working among the prisoners exclusively, and since that time, my co-workers and I have labored among any and all who came within our reach. This was years ago, and that prisoner became a prisoner again because the prison was the only home he had found shelter in for any length of time. 403. His earthly body lies in the prison graveyard and the lockstep is known to him no more! Exclamation mark. But he was locked arms with us in our work, and has offered us many valuable suggestions for the betterment of those we work for. Keep the star of hope burning in every breast, and the earth life will not seem dark nor sordid, and the crimes of others will be viewed more charitably, and instead of feeling that you are so much better than the neighbor who transgressed the laws of man, you will begin to feel that you are not subjected to the same temptations, and will endeavor to so strengthen yourself, morally and spiritually, that you can reach forth a strong arm to those who are less strong, that they may be guided in safety past the pitfalls of life. I am known to my companions as Gregory, or the Watchful One. I try to be watchful of the welfare of others, and I ask those upon earth who read this to cooperate with me in this work. Seance number 25, September 21, 1902. 404. The same circle as at last seance. The first matter of seeming importance was the assertion of the spirit, "Denton, we are always well." These words were uttered by the spirit in this mutual salutation of the spirit and circle. The spirit, after standing a moment before the circle in the condition of visibility, queried, "Friends, how do you all do this evening?" Each of the circle answered, "I am feeling quite well this evening." The secretary returned the query and, "Professor, how do you all do on your side?" "Spirit, we are always well." And the spirit retired while the circle pondered the wonderful words uttered by an inhabitant of the spirit world, "We are always well." Fidelity 404 1/2. A spirit lady operates typewriter. Bessie announced a new fixture, and a moment later, there was a spirit, in condition of visibility, having the appearance of a woman, standing at the typewriter. This form took and placed a sheet of paper in the machine, and began and continued writing, to 25 lines on one page, having 12 words to the line, and writing in the time rate of 1 line in 5 seconds, which is the rate of 2 1/2 words per second, or 150 words per minute. Not many women, young, old or middle-aged, can duplicate this, on a second-hand number to Remington typewriter. This spirit, though, seemed to take her time to take out and replace paper. So she continued on to 66 lines of 12 words to the line as follows, to wit, 405. "For years I have been in the messenger service in spirit life. I have worked much among spirits upon the earth plane as well as in the spirit spheres, and in this way, have been able to keep in touch with many new inventions, the typewriter and others." 406. "I am here tonight to report an interview with Caroline Sheridan Norton. Her earth life was so filled with painful experiences that it developed her sense of sympathy so fully that she took up her pen in defense of those oppressed. She was one of the first to call attention to the horrors of child labor in factories, and to the conditions of the lower classes in England at a time when there was an absolute lack of sympathy with the discontent of the poor. While upon earth the thoughts that flowed so freely from her pen were thought to be the product of her own fertile brain, but since passing into spirit life, she has met the grand soul who was able, through her, to call attention to many wrongs. Her work is still among literary people, and she is steadily advancing the cause of humanity." 407. "With her, I visited many places that were strange to me. She took me to the first temple of learning she visited in the spirit world. This temple stands in a terraced garden, and is built of blue and white stone. The white stone looks like fine china, and the blue like turquoise. Surrounded as it is by many beautiful flowers and trees, it makes an imposing sight, one long to be remembered. Past the tall, white, fluted columns of the porch you see the high arched doorway of the temple. No massive doors obstruct the entrance. The arch is hung with rich curtains that are held aside by two life-sized statues, Truth and Knowledge." 408. "We found the spacious entrance hall deserted, but it showed evidences of having been lately occupied, as many books lay on tables and seats. I followed my hostess up the beautiful winding stairs and entered the lecture room of the temple. The lecture had just begun and my hostess motioned for me to sit beside her, and I listened to the most profound lecture I have heard. After the first speaker, a lady, had retired, a venerable old man took the platform. He said that while the lecture the sister had given was more than instructive, it was too deeply scientific to reach the people on earth, that he was so much interested in. He asked for volunteers who felt like they wanted to aid spirits, yet in earthly bodies, to arise, and to my surprise, only one, besides my hostess and myself, arose to our feet. 'I know the work is trying,' he said, 'and I also know that you are doing much good in the spirit spheres, but if you could see the need of missionaries, as I do, I feel sure you would hesitate to spend all of your time here, but would try to impress your ideas upon those on the earth plane who have the power to bring about so much good.'" 409. "The world seems prosperous, but at no time in its history was there so much unnecessary suffering as at the present time. We are called upon to give aid to so many. Suicides are entering spirit life hourly who must spend years getting out of conditions they have ignorantly plunged themselves into. We must call the attention of those still in the body to the wrongs of self-murder, and have them realize the mighty responsibility that is placed upon their shoulders. Have them live right, and death will usher them into beautiful surroundings. He said many things more that I do not recall. 410. I learned that the spirits at this temple, while untiring workers in the spirit world, would not return to earth, if they could avoid doing so, as their earth lives held only unpleasant memories for them. My hostess showed me the large libraries and reading rooms of the temple. These temples are not places of abode, any more than the schools of earth are dwelling places. 411. My hostess thinks that education makes many more susceptible to impressions from the spirit world, while there are a few that education takes away their sensitiveness, but the latter cases are few. She pleads for physical and mental development, believing that the burdens of earth life will rest more lightly, if borne by one who is fully developed. I then return to my work among the lower spheres, content to know that, in my humble way, I bring much happiness to others. Signed, Fidelity Wesley wrote the following dictation to be continued evolution of material and spiritual conditions. 412. It has been a grave difficulty concerning the problem of evolution of man's material and spiritual condition. Now the difficulty which attends this sort of inquiry arises from the fact that persons are little accustomed to pay attention to what goes on in their own minds, yet, in order to be able to judge about other organisms, you must understand about your own mental nature. 413. In infancy and in early childhood, the mind is exclusively so occupied, it needs many efforts and much perseverance in order to obtain facility in observing your own internal mental acts and to scrutinize and analyze your own feelings. It concerns only indirectly such things as you can see and handle, and is directly occupied about things invisible and intangible, the existence of which can be known to you by inference and reasoning only. Thus you are compelled to deal not merely with physical science, but with spiritual science and philosophy. A little patience and perseverance are, however, all that is needed for your purpose, for it is nothing more than common sense used with special care, so philosophy is nothing more than plain reason used in a careful way. 414. No educated man or woman should rest satisfied without trying to understand it, for otherwise, his or her knowledge, sufficient as it may be for many purposes, would nevertheless be without a solid and logical basis, since such questions underlie all physical science, and are implied in every scientific truth which has ever been established. In fact, every man and woman must, consciously or unconsciously, have some system of philosophy, but a reasonable view of such things, and to such a man or woman it may seem worthwhile to spend a little time and take a little trouble with respect to questions which constitute the foundation of all their knowledge. 415. In the first place, such a thing as certainty exists and cannot be denied, for to deny anything, you must affirm its denial. To deny any of these truths leads at once to a skepticism which is absurd, because self-refuting, and are vouched for by the most certain of all characters, their own self-evidence. A. Assuming then, the absolute verity of these fundamental truths, we would here call attention to the fact that what is thus supremely true, is not anything to be apprehended by the senses, but by the reason. What the senses have experienced, many of the things you have seen and the sounds you have heard, as the past sensations of touch, will often appear before the mind again. You can imagine, as imagination is continually made use of by you in all your most abstract reasoning, and your imaginations depend on your past sense. Nevertheless, the intellect is not tied down to the faculty of sense, for though nothing can be imagined which has not been experienced by your sensitive faculty, many things can be conceived of which have never been experienced. It is intellect and not sense, which is necessarily influenced. 416. Certainty belongs to thought, and consciousness reflects thought, and is your ultimate and absolute criterion. It is by conscious intellect that you know you have feelings at all. Without this you might, indeed, feel, but you could not know that you felt, or know yourselves in feeling. 417. Thus each man knows that it is he who feels, as well as he who thinks. Each man is a substantial organized substance with a dynamic, immaterial principle which is revealed in consciousness. This is emphatically the fundamental truth of the science of living things, for of no living thing can any man have so complete a knowledge as he has of himself. 418. By causing you to recognize in your consciousness this innate internal energy which permeates your material body, and forms one with it, science reveals to you a sufficient cause for all other powers and activities, for you need not call in the aid of a second principle, when one is sufficient to account for all the phenomena. Who can doubt but that a lion has the power to exercise all of its five senses simultaneously while in the act of daring its living prey?